Good morning.
Good morning.
Can everybody? Oh, that's pretty good. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Thank you. So the name of my talk is Noli Illegitimi Carborundum. Don't let the bastards get you down. When my father died in 2014, I inherited a sign that he had in his office. It read, Noli Illegitimi Carborundum. And then I learned that it means don't let the bastards grind you down. I hung it in my office at work, which is the University of Minnesota Medical Center, where I work as a chaplain. So this was my father's mantra, right? His view, based on experience, was that life was hard. Mostly they're out to get you. Keep going. So there's some Zen wisdom in that. So I'm going to translate that into Dharma. Suffering comes with life. Keep going. In Japan, they say, Nana korobi ya oki, which means fall down 7 times, get up 8. So we all know this. Maybe, I don't know about you, but maybe like me, you say, again? And then we get up. There's a man named Gar Reynolds who lives in Japan and leads seminar communication. he says, it's especially important to remember the sentiment expressed in this proverb when times are dark, like maybe like now. There are no quick fixes in life, and anything of real worth will necessarily take much struggle and perseverance. So Zazen is a great training. We just come back, come back, come back, come back. Our back hurts, our mind hurts, our heart hurts, our body hurts. We're tired. We don't wanna. But we stay. We bear it. I mean, that sounds really like, ugh, and there is a lot of, ugh, but it's also like incredible. We bear it. Yes. That's fantastic. Katagiri Roshi, who was my teacher, some of you don't know me at all, so I'll just say Katagiri Roshi was my teacher starting in 1975, something like that. Then I met So-san in 1998. Yeah. Then it just goes on from there. So last October, I was in Brooklyn, New York, visiting my daughter. And we watched several episodes of The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu. Because it was free for a month. So maybe you've read Margaret Atwood's book or not, but this is really well done. It portrays a horrible, dysphoric possible future in the United States. So instead of feeling that this story was interesting and awful, I thought, how many steps down the ladder is it from where we are to the story that I was watching unfold? I noticed that thought, and it stunned me. In the piece, the main character, maybe you've seen it or you've read the book, but anyway, the main character finds this Latin phrase written on an old storage case on the floor of her closet. So the Latin phrase that I said, don't let the bastards get you down. And it becomes her fall down seven times, get up eight mantra. It connects her to all the women who are suffering in just the way that she is suffering. And in it, she finds a thread of strength. Someone in this lineage of suffering resisted this before me, before her. And so we can do it too. I found out about the phrase. It's not really Latin. It's like, I don't know. It got purloined by generals for use as a slogan, and students at Harvard made it up or something like that. So if you really know Latin, don't get mad at me because I don't know. Okay. So in our particular political environment, many things that I hold as a high value that are wholesome and life-giving are not being held up as valuable, I think. Things feel frightening and dark to me. So every day I need to remind myself, "Gambatte kudasai," never give up. One time I drove from Hokioji back to my house in Minneapolis in a blizzard. There were like two cars on 90 because you weren't supposed to be on 90. And when I got home, I talked to Shokin somehow, and he said, "Gambatte kudasai." So dysphoria means a state of unease or generalized dissatisfaction with life. Does that sound familiar? It also means in Greek, hard to bear, dysphoria. So I think this is interesting because it kind of matches the Buddha's description of dukkha, upon which the Four Noble Truths are based. So dukkha is often translated as suffering. And what that means is getting what we don't want and not getting what we do want. Does that sound familiar? So the Four Noble Truths are a prescription for dealing with that condition. And we call the Buddha the great physician because the prescription is based on a formula that doctors used in India, physicians used in India at that time. So it teaches us how to recognize suffering. I can't emphasize how important that is. Because a lot of times I think we go, oh, it's okay. It's not really happening. I think I'll fall asleep now. You know, it's hard to face it. Even when I teach in grief, I teach a grief group at work, and I talk about grief showing up, you know, and wearing all these different costumes, and that we want to ignore it. But even turning toward it is huge. So even turning toward our suffering is giant. So we want to recognize it, and it also, this formula teaches us how to be free from suffering, which I would like very much. Yeah. So the basis for the guidelines, which are the embodiment of freedom, are the three pure precepts, which we chant sometimes. And the three pure precepts are basically these. And Byakuren made a little song to them, which helps me remember them, which is, I think, something like this. Do good, don't do harm, save all sentient beings. Something like that. So do good, okay, don't do harm, save all living beings. Those are the three pure precepts. So in a formal way we say, with purity of heart, I vow to abstain from unwholesome things. With purity of heart, I vow to do the wholesome things. With purity of heart, I vow to benefit all beings. So that's the underlying basis of everything that we're doing. So if we get mixed up, just sing yourself that song. You know, it's like a kindergarten song, right? That's good. Sometimes that's the best. Simple. Do good, don't do harm, save all living beings. So in order to understand the depth of this, we need to consider one of the limbs of the Eightfold Path, which is right view, right? We've heard of that, right? Right view. So from the non-duality of right view, we understand that every construction that we make of everything in every moment does not exist separate from any other thing or any moment. So it's like this amazing dance. It's constantly going and everything is influencing everything and it never ever stops. So from each set of constituencies, the next set arises. Roshi used to say, just take one step, then natural re, the next step, we're alive. I'm quoting exactly what he said. Because you are, I am. So for me, understanding this provides the superpower energy needed to take up these precepts. So I learned about superpower when I read A Tale for the Time Being by Ruth Ozeki, and I love that book so much. I highly recommend it. A Tale for the Time Being. And this little girl who's having a lot of dukkha ends up spending time with, I think it's her great-grandmother? Is it her great-grandmother? Her grandmother, who's very, very old in a monastery. She's a nun. And at one point, the grandma says, I'm going to teach you your superpower. And she teaches her zazen. That's her superpower. So Suzuki Roshi said, even picking up a piece of dust is a problem. So no matter what we do, there's a problem. It's a problem. And yet, we have to pick up the piece of dust. We have to pick it up. So greed, hatred, and ignorance are called the three poisons. Do you know there's lots of lists? Lots and lots. That's because stuff wasn't written down. So if you had lists, you could remember like the five this and the ten this and the three. Okay, so the three poisons. I don't think I'm alone in thinking this, that greed, hatred, and ignorance seem to be marketed as the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, these days, right? Everything is fake, you know what. So, are we being invited to take refuge in separating ourselves from the myriad amazing forms that human beings show up as? Muslim, Jews, Hindus, Africans, Christians, Hispanics, etc., 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 etc. According to the teachings, if we do so, we are not even investigating right view. So I'm sure if we just sit for a second, we can all make a list of distortions of right view among which we now live, like financial inequity, racial inequality, environmental destruction, sexual violence, medical inequity, and not facing the truth of the suffering we're in. So I'm just like describing what we all know every day when we read the paper, but it's nice to breathe about it together, not just by myself in the kitchen. So I need to ask myself, in what do I take refuge these days? How can I be the monk that walked with grace through the dead bodies on the field of battle that woke up King Ashoka to practice the Eightfold Path? So instead of taking refuge in the three poisons, let's take refuge in the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So Buddha, the potentiality for all of us to see through the veils of delusion that keep us bound to a separate self, a separate earth, a separate anything. And Dharma, this is what the Buddhas and ancestors imparted to us to help us awaken, and the living truth that we live of what they taught us, this complete interconnected web. And Sangha is that web unbound of creation and the community that longs to awaken together. So in a sense, that longing not to suffer. If you're Buddhist or you're an ant, you don't want to suffer. So we're all in that Sangha together. So we chant the refuges. I take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, to center our hearts there instead of everywhere else, like in our distractions and in our distresses. So like yesterday, I worked yesterday, and I had the opportunity to meet with a gentleman who was suffering, trying to understand his suffering, and he had been drinking and was messing up his life. And he was centering his heart in his distress, which is normal. So we listened together to his story of his distress. And then, without talking about Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, exactly, because he was Lutheran, which was great, we talked about bringing our attention to what's actually happening. Not this part. I'm bad and I can't. And just like, what's happening? And catching that suffering immediately before it starts growing into a giant storm. Centering ourselves in the three refuges. So I take refuge in Buddha. We've all done this. May all living beings embody the great way, resolving to awaken. I take refuge in Dharma. May all living beings deeply enter the teachings, wisdom like the sea, so huge. I take refuge in Sangha. May all living beings support harmony in the community, completely without hindrance. Huge and not easy, but worthwhile, right? Better than taking refuge in my anger, my irritation, my overwhelm that I feel every single day because there's just too much. Yeah. So, what's important to me is that we acknowledge the dysphoria and name it clearly and touch the feelings that arise with it with tenderness and specificity and simplicity. So what do we need to cultivate in order to bring compassion and wisdom to ourselves and all living beings? It's like an ongoing question. It's like a huge koan, like every day, right? So there's several phrases in the metta practice that I do sometimes when I wake up in the morning and anxiety starts, like, oh, then there's this and this and this. And this one I use May I live with ease of well-being in this world of change. Over and over as I'm waking up. It reminds me of my true aspiration. Ease of well-being. When that's present, I tend to remember my vows better and tend to remember I can take refuge in my practice with a little more tenacity. And another useful practice that's one of the divine abodes is equanimity. It's a practice, and it's one of the seven, another list, factors of enlightenment. So one time, a long, long time ago, I was given this topic, equanimity, to give a talk on, and my husband just started laughing. Ha, ha, ha. There's hope for all of us. So when we're working with equanimity, which is like a great thing to be working with right now, here's some phrases that we can return to when the winds are blowing. I am the owner of my karma. My happiness and unhappiness depend upon my actions, not upon my wishes for myself or someone else. I am the owner of my karma. Things are just as they are. This is how it is right now. May we be undisturbed by the comings and goings of events. We can incline our hearts in that direction. Also, I care for you, but I cannot keep you from suffering. That's a big one. Because if I care for someone, I want to make them not suffer sometimes. And that we know that doesn't work. So I keep my care, but I have to allow that other person to find their way. Yeah. I wish you happiness, but I cannot make your choices for you. So these phrases can return us to wholesome and grounded acceptance of what's happening in the moment. They can remove that layer of reactivity to what is around us and remind us of do good, don't do harm, save all living beings. They can remind us of that. So I'm going to end with a story. It's a Zen story. There's lots of interpretations of this story, but you might have heard this story before. One day, Yang Guan called to his attendant, "Bring me the rhinoceros fan." So it's a fan made out of rhinoceros horn. The attendant said, "The fan is broken." Yang Guan said, "If the fan is broken, then bring me back the rhinoceros." The attendant had no reply. I think you must be getting it. So, wait a minute. The fan is broken. What do you mean? Bring me the rhinoceros. So, beyond the practice I offered to deal with the dysphoria that surrounds us, there's something else, and it has nothing to do with the practices that we might use to try to keep ourselves on track. Not that we shouldn't do those. They're like, you know, if you want to grow a garden, you still have to turn over the earth and water and put the fertilizer and, you know, you can't do nothing, right? But the something else is non-duality itself, that we already are, that is the healer of the brokenness we feel. So Byakuren wrote in her blog, "Each event has within it its own destruction or impermanence," which usually we hate impermanence, but here's the good side. "In each moment there is birth and destruction. Nothing in the form world escapes destruction. So what can we do with that? Where do we take refuge?" So when we can deeply acknowledge that there's no escape from how things are, where do we take refuge? We are invited strongly to find the source that actually made the fan in the first place. bring me the rhinoceros, the whole thing. Show me your original face, the face you had before you were born. The source is never broken, and it's never fixed either. It cannot be grasped or categorized. We soften and let go of our stories, our grasping of our stories, and what's there? Emptiness. Nothing. Everything. The rhinoceros. That's you. That's me. That's everything. How am I doing? Okay. So here's a story from my work where the rhinoceros showed up. So there was this man. He was really sick. Really, 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 really sick. And he was on my rehab unit just to try to get him good enough to go home and die, basically. And so he was Lutheran, and he was very stolid, and he hardly talked. And I went to see him one day, and his wife was in the room. And so I was just quiet with him. And then he was getting ready to go home to his house. And I said, "Are you ready to go home now?" I just asked him, "Are you ready to go home?" And there was this kind of quiet space. And he shook his head. And then I just said, "You're not ready to go home." And the rhinoceros showed up. I don't know what happened. But he cried, I cried, his wife cried. There was no life, no death, no coming, no going, no illness, no health, no anything. You know, I don't know what language his wife might have used to name that moment. I don't know. Wow. I didn't do anything. The rhinoceros was already there, apparently. Katagiri wrote this poem. "Entering the mud, entering the water, a bodhisattva enters this moment of life, going into delusions, paying attention to the delusion, and figuring out what each delusion needs to be taken care of with respect. Each moment, each thing, each person is an expression of eternity or the source of life. And we can see and treat them this way." So this is how we live out the admonition in our fake Latin phrase, "Noli illegitimi carborundum." Don't let the bastards get you down. So that's all I have to say. But I'm very interested in what you might have to say. So please, come forth if you want to. Yeah.
Sharing, and thank you, hopefully, to share that on the website, possibly, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
There's so many lists.
I know. That's only a few. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, I will, because it's every day. for me, it's like, oh my God, it never ends. So right now, my boss isn't here, right? So I can. Okay, so my wonderful boss retired, and someone else took his job, who I don't find to be wonderful, let's just say. So quite often he will say something to me that in my world is not okay. It's kind of demeaning, like it's a power thing, or it's like, and I feel all kinds of things at that moment, you know, like I feel angry, I feel shocked, I feel powerless, like what do? Like, so, and I have my own brokenness that those things he says to me just drag out of the bottom and start creating a, you know, things. And so I try to first wake up to the shock, like, did that just happen? Did he just say that? I try to wake up to the shock, and then I feel scared, so I want to wake up to that. Then I feel angry, so I try to wake up to that. And then I start making up a story about him. So then I wake up to that. And then I go, okay, if we keep doing this, you're going to create complete separation from this person, and it's going to be bad, and you're going to be tense. And he's going to be tense, even though he doesn't know you're doing it, because you don't say anything, because you have at least that much self-control. But, So it's like, wow. So how can I honor all these things that are coming up and not go, oh, be nice? I'm not actually very good at being nice. But no, you know, don't do that. Like, let myself have it all. Let me be in just don't know. I mean, not like, oh, I don't know. Like, oh, just don't know. Oh, I could go into psychologizing. What is the word? You know, psychologizing him. Will that help? No. Okay. Oh, I could see he's scared. Huh. He doesn't feel up to the job, and he's not. And things like that. So, but I mean, it's like going in my head a lot. Because why? Because the ways he's behaving is giving me the opportunity to heal again that deeper broken stuff that he doesn't really have anything to do with. So stopping, you know, the zazen of stopping gives me the opportunity to use the practice to make some analysis of what's happening that's not the usual one of he's the jerk and I'm the victim, or he shouldn't act like that as a boss. Doesn't he know, blah, 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 you know? I know from analysis, from my practice, that that's not where it's at, although it's very tempting. But actually, I want to say another thing. That making up the story about him is sort of tempting, like sugar is tempting. Because the minute I take a bite, I know, ooh, my body doesn't like this. It's actually making my liver tired. So that's how I... Does that make any sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yes,
well,
Kathleen.
It's such a good teaching about the truth of delusion and how, as you know, as we feed ourselves those beliefs or stories, how it keeps us so separate.
Yeah.
And we're participating, you know, we're participating in that suffering.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's such a good lesson about just, oh, delusions, if I feed them, create suffering. I mean, create separation. That's, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So I have a few things that I have gotten to sort of tell myself about stuff. And recently, listened to this cognitive behavioral therapy talk, and the person who's doing it said something that I kind of grasp, and he said, thoughts are neither true nor false. They're either helpful or unhelpful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of use that as a, am I having a helpful or an unhelpful thought?
That's right.
And then going back to the whole Buddhist part of it, I know there's a morning prayer that we have said with different periods of time where it's, I am of the nature to have ill health. There's no way to escape having ill health. I'm of the nature to grow old. There's no way to escape growing old. I'm of the nature to die. There's no way to escape death. And all that I care about and everyone I love are of the nature to change, and there's no way to escape change. And then the next part is what I grasp onto, which is, this is my interpretation, my actions are my only true possessions or companions, and so I kind of grasp at the unhelpful thoughts, and then actions are really the only thing that is actually mine. So that's how I
exactly
approach stuff.
It's beautiful. That's just what the equanimity phrases remind us of. I am the heir of my karma, like it or not. What else do you want to say? Yes.
I have a question about the story. The way you said that your boss is sad, that is a story as well, but it feels different than the, oh, he's a bad person.
Yeah,
so I'm
that's
trying
right.
to understand how that's different.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I notice is if I notice, you know, first of all, my thoughts that are unwholesome have a nature of like this, kind of swirly. They have a kind of chemical tone, which I've discovered over many years. When I have a seeing, like, he's scared, my heart softens. It's not this. So I think that's wholesome. It's not like, oh, he's sad. You know,
sad.
So sad.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Yeah.
So I had a similar situation where I had a boss that really probably was a bully.
Mm-hmm.
Supervisors under that person, and three of them, including myself, left. The other thought I have is just in the process of being self-aware, it also helps you to make decisions about how you take care of yourself.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's right.
So it's also not for the purpose of enduring a lot of harassment endlessly. It's allowing yourself to understand what's happening and make some decisions.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Right. It's not like, oh, I'm practicing with this abuse. No. Oh, there's abuse. Bye. I'm taking care of this precious being. Can I do something? I mean, it's just what we all know. Can I do something about the situation that will be wholesome? Yes, good, do it. Can I not? No. Bye. That's not easy, though. What else? Yes.
So today in the Sunday New York Times, Nicholas Kristof wrote a column about how President Trump's behavior has really distracted us from more important societal issues like rural health care and the education of children, good access to prenatal care, and all these important issues that face us have really, by folks, been put on the back burner. This distraction, this swirl, instead of really being focused on the things that are maybe more important, and that maybe we could all, through collective effort, do something about. And it, I thought it paralleled well with what you were discussing.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Keep your eye on the prize.
And that maybe it's a strategy, and that we're all being, we're sort of willingly being duped by it.
I don't know.
And that if we notice it, we could.
Well, you are noticing it, so that's cool. Thank you. Am I too early? Oh, there's still time. Should we sing a song? I took stuff out of here because I thought, oh, this is going to be too long. Oh, yeah.
I think this is also really good practice in speaking about our current president. It is this flailing chaos, soap opera, so not centered that I think this practice is extremely important. Just having as many people as possible try to be centered.
Yeah. Well, let's sit till the ding dong. Oh, are they coming now?
No.
Oh, wait, I have something. Can I say something?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to bring this to your attention. next weekend, there's a possible retreat, if we get enough people, at Hokioji about focused on stillness and movement. So there'll be a text that has to do with that, and we'll do practices that have to do with the body moving and the body in stillness and all the concomitant pieces that have to do with that. So,
not everyone knows about Hokioji.
Oh, Hokioji, that's a good thing to talk about. Hokioji is a country practice place in southeast Minnesota that was established by Katagiri Roshi. And in the 90s was finally taken over by Dokai Jorkson, who's a Zen teacher, who was a Dharma heir of Katagiri Roshi. And it is beautiful. It's in the driftless region. So there's all these cliffs and the moon rises over the bridge. And it's very quiet and hidden. It's like in a hidden valley. And it's very, very beautiful. And if it's nice, we do things outside there. So that's what, does that, good? Yeah. And Clouds and Water goes there and does Sesshin, practices there, and Compassion Ocean goes there, and different people go there. Yeah. So you can go there too, if you want. This flyer is on the bulletin board around the corner. I'm leading it with Dokai, if you're interested. Let's sit. Are they lining up? Okay, well, let's do some zazen then for a few moments.